Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Monday. It's the 18th of July, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. We started off with a little bit of rain, so I guess we'll get a little bit of everything today. But most importantly, we have the most important issue, and that is we're going to be speaking with John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizen-Net reporter, publisher, and editor, and he always begins our week on Monday mornings at 10 o'clock. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning, where it is a well-needed rainy day.
Absolutely.
It is so rainy. It's raining a lot more than rain, I'll tell you.
I think so. Well, there's a lot of stuff that's going on besides the rain. And
too much
the
stuff.
Big thing that a lot of stuff. The big thing that I found a little bit wanting was the press notice from Dr. Amler and George Latimer, the Westchester County executive, with regard to the monkeypox. Why are they just trying to, I guess, lower the concern about it? Because we didn't order enough vaccines when we could have.
Well, there is not enough vaccine, period. The big article this morning in the New York Times pointed out that we have been late in ordering it. The government has been late and has ordered it, but they're behind on shipments. And this is creating, since monkeypox is apparently a lot more contagious than COVID,
this
is a problem.
Because in what way is it more contagious than COVID?
Spread
because
by
most
touch.
People, oh, it's just by touch? Okay.
Touch. Well, and through
I
clothing.
I know that originally the monkeypox was named after a monkey because a monkey was the one that had the disease, and then it traveled, you know, through touch, through clothing and stuff like that. And I don't know why it became such a big to-do, and all of a sudden it became like a battering ram against people who were gay.
Well, in
fact, only gays are getting infected.
Well, we had 16 as of Saturday night in Westchester. That was what was reported by News Radio, I believe, 88, I mean. And but the problem is that very, very little until today as far as the monkeypox spread. And but, I mean,
no,
if
it's very
spread
interesting.
By time, yeah. Yeah, go
it's
ahead.
Very interesting about all this bullshit that goes on every day on different issues is that whoever disseminates this information disseminates it as they wish. They play a game of who they think should get it and who shouldn't. At the end of the day, everybody has an outlet of some sort, whether you have one person listening or you have a million people listening.
Right.
The point is they shouldn't decide. They should just get the information out. I'm sick of it already. I'm disgusted every time I turn around. Dr. Amler, as far as I'm concerned, is the biggest waste of time in my whole life. I've never seen such shit in my whole life. I'm disgusted by her behavior. I'm disgusted by her lateness. I'm disgusted by the lack of information. It's just pathetic. And I didn't get it from her. I got it from other people and other sources. Because it's a game that gets played in Westchester County, and they think they're getting away with it. And the more people that get sick from this, the more they're going to suffer. And I wish them the suffering that they cause other people. And that's what they deserve.
Well, this is a terrible disease if you're a child. It's terrible.
I didn't know that children get infected with
they
it, too.
Do.
I guess it happens.
And they will.
Know.
They do, and they will, if because there's no vaccine available for under 18s.
I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things Amler said. And but the seriousness of that was underplayed. My feeling is this is a wake-up call for all school superintendents to start thinking seriously about what kind of policy they should have as far as touching in the schools.
Well, John, you know, when you become the commissioner of a school, then maybe we'll get somewhere. Until that happens, you can dream forever and ever, and you will never wake up from it.
Yeah, the superintendents have got to – this is a wake-up call because they have to decide a policy now.
Well, why isn't there a call by the Westchester County Executive as well as Dr. Ambler to all sit down and invite all the different school districts and have a discussion about it and figure out how to do it instead of these bulldozers?
Well, they may very well do that today in their briefing. They may do that today in their briefing. We'll see.
Oh, well, you think so? Well, that's good.
I said they may.
Oh, wait. I know what you said.
They may,
so
but
maybe
I mean,
they will. Maybe they won't.
Well, they shouldn't have to
it.
Do that. The superintendents have to wake up and smell the coffee up there on Cape Cod or whatever, or wherever
yeah,
they
guess
are.
Guess what? They don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
John, you know, you can hope from here to kingdom come, but they don't do it on their own. I'm sorry.
Because it's controversial, you know, but... But be that
well,
as it may, that is an issue. That is an
issue.
Monkeypox is an issue because it's like chickenpox. It spreads by touch. And I remember had it when I was a kid, and you were itching, and you had to have a – this was many years ago. And that's why smallpox was so bad, because it left you disfigured, et cetera, and I think after seeing those lesions, that pictures of people that have it, and those look like they are really going to scar if you itch them, and you are, because it's a terrible disease.
If you scratch them, then they will leave scars. It looks like it. Those are like pustules that fill up with pus.
And you don't want to get that. You don't want to get it. This is, I mean, but be that as it may, they are limited. You have to show symptoms before you can get vaccinated because there's so little of it. And this is a real
problem. I didn't
realize
there was so little of it. Aren't there over 100,000, doses that are available? Do we need 100,000?
Yeah, but how many people are in the country?
I was
That's
just
nothing.
Talking about New York State. So I don't know.
Well, yeah, but
I
mean,
think
there are
New York State
8
orders
million
for the
people
entire
in
nation.
New York
Do you?
Yeah.
Does New York State order for the entire nation?
Well, we know.
We didn't order all the other stuff for the entire nation. We just ordered it for New York State. What's the difference? Why are we ordering small, you know, this pox vaccine for every state? We're not going to. We have no jurisdiction over New Jersey or Connecticut. Hey, you know,
well,
the federal government.
The question
to do it,
is, there. Well, let's just talk about New York. New York has a lot of people, and New York City is the epicenter. We have the most cases. I think it was 437, something like that, and. That was 2 days ago. And so therefore, you've got to at least inoculate those 437 because they had it. Yeah. And, the vaccine is – the vaccine
helps cure it. Weren't there over 100 in Westchester County? Aren't there an additional 100 in Westchester County?
There are 16 in Westchester. There were 16 Saturday night. Now, if it's up much higher today, we have a problem. A real problem, and something has to be thought about very quickly of getting more vaccines into the Westchester and New York, Nassau County, Queens.
Well, John, with all due respect, that sounds just like a political line. Yeah, we need to worry about it. We need to be concerned. We need to do this. We need to do that.
Well, you
got to
worry about your behavior. You can't touch people. You can't.
Well, that's right.
You
but
got it. And clothing can also infect you.
Did anyone ever say that? Well,
yes.
You know, but you just have your outlet. The point is, shouldn't that come from a medical somebody or another?
How hot came from Amler on Friday morning.
Uh-huh, good for her. All right, well, whatever. What can I tell you?
Well, it's just,
I'm underwhelmed.
We are
okay.
Just an information conduit.
Well, I don't think we're an information conduit, especially if they keep people ignorant of what's going on.
Well, I will say this, that I have always felt that it should not be the county executive who explains medical situations. It should be Amler.
Well, evidently she's not doing it that way.
But, she hasn't appeared for a while. And
maybe she's not feeling
well. And he has said, Mr. Latimer, our county executive, has been downplaying the COVID spread, and saying it's in diminution, but it's not. It's just not in diminution. We had another high week, the fifth out of six weeks that we had over 2,000 infections. We're running at 394 a day. That would mean that so far in July, if I have the numbers correct right here in front of me, so far in July, we have generated, let's see, 4,800 infections in July in 15 days.
Just
so
in
if
July
you double long. That, if you double that, you're going to get approximately 9,000 to 10,000 if only one person transfers it to another person. And I'm being
right.
And if it's one infects two in a family, if one infects three, just multiply that by three times. I mean, we are in a bad situation for spreading COVID, and it's getting worse. You know.
Well, the only thing is that no matter what you say or what I say, and no matter, or rather, that we don't hear that much anyway from medical advice. Across the nation. The bottom line is people are tired of discussing it. I hear there's another variant that is really going through the roof. So
BA5.
Yeah, but there's another one that's in between that now. So whatever it is, a lot of people are just not taking care as much as they can, and they're exhausted by it.
Well,
you just have to be vigilant.
There's no reason why you should be tired of it, because you have to be vigilant and wary. You are a target. And if you don't have it and have never had it, you could be carrying the disease and passing it to other people. The testing, the testing quantities, which are the only testing that is reported is verified cases of it. So that means if you are seeing like an 11% infection rate of these very small test quantities that they had last week, and that's what Westchester is experiencing, that means that across the board, for all the people you don't test or get confirmed tests on, you've got 11% of the balance that has not tested. 11%. That is an enormous number of people as you go up. And
so the question is, can you rationalize why people are not paying attention? Because I can't see it.
Well,
you know, like,
now
you people don't care.
Yes. Well, what I think is happening is people get exposed. I know a person that did get exposed the other day in a close situation, and they took one of those antigen tests, the at-home tests, and it tested negative. So that was great.
Okay.
Had it tested positive, that person would have had to go in to someplace to get it confirmed with a lab test.
Okay.
And that takes a little time. So you've got a lag between the lab okayed positives that the state is reporting mm-hmm. and the actual number of positives out there, if they haven't decided
right.
to test. Now, why? There may be people who get test positive and then just stay home. So that would be good, but they don't want to lose work time or not be able to go back to work. So they ignore mm-hmm. it. I don't know how many do that. I think it's dangerous for them, but I mean, nobody is tracing anymore. It appears. Tracing was a good thing because that helped really squash the first wave. But mm. now we are into wave 5, big time.
Yeah.
Just the best way it is.
Okay, so the way it looks is like that. Unfortunately.
Right.
It's unfortunate that it looks like people are not going to be, they're not focused on it. So I guess they want to just remove it
right.
from their mind. Okay,
right.
It is what it is. So is there any other sort of behavior pattern that would be best for government to engage in or something else that you think might be worthwhile?
Well, the government has to. And I don't mean just, say, the leader of the counties or whatever, mm-hmm. but the leaders of individual towns have to start waking up and smelling the coffee and get a hold of this situation.
Well, why don't they have a meeting, let's say, like here we go, Westchester. I don't know how many communities we have within Westchester. I'm sure there are at least, 20? Easy,
yeah.
One community after another, cities, villages, stuff like that. Why don't they all get together? They could even have a Zoom program and talk about, the numbers in their community and so on and so forth. Why don't they put a little bit of, gravitas to these issues? I don't get
Why
it.
Why don't they? Yes. Why don't they? I mean, It deserves getting people's attention. Either you stop having these dopey festivals all summer long, okay,
mm-hmm.
and outdoor
yeah.
things where people mingle, and you just mm-hmm. you just say, no, we are not going to allow a permit for that. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have a big festival in a park or something like that, you just say, look, we feel this is too dangerous the way COVID is spreading. But that makes
mm-hmm.
them unpopular, as the musical Wicked says. And everybody wants to be popular.
So if people are popular, whatever the case is, though, isn't it costing us more in productivity when people get infected? Or is it costing us less when some individuals get infected? Because we allow the business to continue. So from a financial perspective, financially, it seems government would rather keep employing people despite the fact that potentially they could get sick.
Government wants to keep the economy moving, at least in this state, because
uh-huh.
you've got
mm-hmm.
a gubernatorial election coming up, and you've got
mm-hmm.
a race between Governor Hochul, who is being opposed by Lee Zeldin, who is extremely
mm-hmm.
conservative. He's a Republican,
mm-hmm.
and he is going to hit hard on the inflation thing, and that we're not doing
mm-hmm.
enough for the economy. And this is a situation that can be exploited if Governor Hochul comes down hard on business and human behavior on COVID. Zeldin is going to say, hey, look, we've controlled it down in Florida by not being safe. But he's not going to tell you that. You can see what he's going to say in his ads.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we need to be free and the disease would run itself. But it hasn't run itself. Florida has a lot of cases. And
mm-hmm.
on top of that, you've got the situation whereby if you do not put in restraints when it's spreading, it's just going to spread more. And you downplay. You downplay. And Florida suppressed actual results.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the governor down there fired his chief of health, I think. I just don't remember. But I mean, I just don't like to see what is happening in Florida, because if Mr. DeSantis, the governor of Florida, wrests the nomination for Republicans, I think he'll win.
Mm-hmm.
I think he will win. He is the strongest candidate because Mr. Trump is unfit.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem. He's acting more unfit every day. But the one thing is, Trump is not going to hold any more rallies because of this monkeypox problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or he shouldn't.
Do you think the monkeypox thing is going to put a stop to a lot of the politicking? So I guess
it should. It should. You're putting people at risk, particularly in the New York metropolitan area. I mean, we have a lot of cases. And it's spreading, unfortunately, as reported directly by the gay community, by the New York Times. New York Times wrote that this morning, which is surprising because it's reminiscent of how AIDS was downplayed because it was a gay disease.
Mm-hmm.
It was an excuse not to pay attention to it.
Well,
I remember that.
It was regarded as a gay disease then, and I guess it still is to this day. But when it comes to this thing, it's not a gay disease. It's a disease, you know, that spreads among people, and you don't have to engage in sexual behavior as a gay might, whether male or female, to be exposed. And like you said, you could just touch clothing or something, or go into a restaurant. You could touch something. If it's not cleaned well, you could be infected.
Exactly. Restaurants, big risk.
Yeah.
I would think. But we don't know. Right now, if I were a waiter... or a server, as they call them these days, I would wear plastic gloves. Straight up. Plastic gloves.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has mentioned that as to whether plastic gloves would prevent infection by touch.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, you know, with this disease. But, I mean, we don't know. We should know more. And once again, this is an informational dropped ball by the CDC. And, geez, I mean, I just don't understand it. And, hey, air travel, a big problem, because they were bringing people, and we don't know where they're coming from. We need to know that. But remember, when we stopped COVID in the first wave, and then we let it come back because of our behavior, we made people quarantine for 14 days, and we tested them when they came in. That was smart.
Yes.
Tamed it to an extent. And then when the legislators in New York State took over, threw out the emergency powers that Governor Cuomo had, it has all come back big time. They haven't done a thing since in regulating COVID preventive behavior. They haven't. And the legislature owns
it.
Is there
any, I guess, smart modality that they could engage? You know, it's not an autocratic government. We're not in China where we can shut down an entire city and conduct business where you have to stay at home and you can't go shopping and you can't do this and you can't do that. So what is the best practice? Are we doing the best we can at the moment? It doesn't seem like we can do more, or so it seems.
We should be thinking about doing more. like this week.
Yeah,
I mean,
I would think so.
Particularly with the monkeypox thing, because that's just terrible. It breaks out in the schools in New York City. It's just not going to be good.
It will break out.
I'm surprised it
hasn't broken out already.
School is out of session. You know, you're in the summer school period right now. And but the children are at camps, et cetera. And many from the city go to camp out of the city. And it's just a matter of time before somebody wakes up and say, oh, my God, we've got a whole camp infected. I mean,
I
got
to ask you,
did Dr. Allen
say that kids can get infected too?
Yes.
Do kids also get infected? I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yes. Well, if there's no vaccine, they can't. It has to run the course.
Vaccine has to help cure the disease.
Yes. But we don't understand why a vaccine, which is usually known as a preventive, you know, from getting it, fighting the bacteria when it gets in the body, it's also prophylactic. I don't understand that at all, but that's what she said it was, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know myself.
So we are given this information that means that, however, you have to get the disease before they give you the vaccine. Not a good idea. I was all set to call up this morning, trying to make an appointment over at the health department in White Plains. But I, of course, have no symptoms. So if you have to have symptoms to get the vaccine, just to conserve the vaccine for people who really have it, this is a problem.
Yeah, because once you have the symptoms, it's already, I mean, you could probably see it on your person.
The herd is out of the barn. The herd is out of the corral in this case. And,
okay.
Yeah, to update and all we're saying. But
one would think also that the CDC would really have all this down pat, that they would understand what the different maladies are out there, and they have a modality of telling you how and what to do to conduct yourself in a manner that's going to lessen your exposure. Or if you're infected, what to do if you get infected and what to look out for. I'm surprised that there isn't a defined a form of conduct for this sort of thing.
Well, the I'm looking for the head of the CDC, who the medical person, head of that, was quoted this morning as saying they are very short on the vaccines, and it's going to be a while before we
get
the vaccines out there. And that is once again another thing that the Republicans in the national campaign are just going to pounce on. Nonetheless, we even... I mean, look, the Republicans are really good at criticizing, but they're not really good at making solutions to anything.
Well, we'll just have to see where this is going to go.
We don't want to see it. I don't want to see it because this is horrendous.
I think it's going to be. It seems like it's going to be very
horrendous. It's worse than COVID.
And probably more contagious. More contagious than what we are dealing with now, because it's so easily spread.
Well, that's what we're being told it is. Yes, that's what we're being told it is.
Exactly.
So, hazmat suits are the only way to really protect yourself, right?
I guess. I'm not sure.
But
at least
we can't catch it by breathing in the stuff, unless you kiss a lot or something.
That seems to be a safe thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, we'll have to see, as we always say at the end of these programs, because we see no improvement in the way government anywhere is dealing with things.
Exactly. I can't blame the Republicans or the Democrats on this. I don't know why we're not these issues, and I don't know why it even took so long for us to recognize that this was a problem.
I mean,
I think it took a long time.
This monkeypox is, what, a week?
I thought it was much longer than that, to be honest with you, John.
Well, in this country,
so it's a few weeks
in
already.
This country, it's suddenly become an issue in the last week.
No, you're right.
But
I don't understand why why didn't we deal with it when we realized it was happening in Africa and in Europe and in Asia. I don't understand what we were waiting for. Well, we'll see. You know, we have to wait. We're at the receiving end, as they say.
Right. But I mean,
well, John,
I don't know what I would do if I was the state, but I'd be really having a meeting and thinking about how we're going to work through this and quickly.
I would think so. Well, John, we've got to let you go because we've got our next guest on, Michael Edelman, and we'll talk to him. So you have a great week. Stay safe.
Let's
whatever
talk
you
monkeypox in Florida if they've got any.
Absolutely.
Down there. Yeah.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah,
all right, be good.
Okay.
Take care and goodbye.
Bye for now.
Okay. So pick on Michael Edelman, Esquire. He's a national as well as an international political analyst and pundit. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you? Monkeypox and all?
Yes, it evidently, you know, it's made an impact in the United States. I would have thought that we would have been a little bit more prepared, but maybe there's nothing more to prepare. Though we've heard about the news in Europe and in Asia, Africa.
It does not kill you. It does not kill you.
It doesn't kill you, but
no.
Yeah, except it isn't going to be very debilitative.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't have. Well, look, you know, we're still trying to get people inoculated against COVID.
COVID.
How many people have not gotten their vaccines? And if they did get a vaccine, they didn't get a booster. And that's why COVID is returning. There is far more risk from the BA.5 variant than there is from monkeypox.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what I fathom? I don't know, maybe it's a question of age. Does one get to a point in their life where they say, well, you know, I don't feel like dropping dead now. I'm not 40 and I'm not 30. And maybe when you're 30 or 40 or 50, you may not think of dying so much. But, you know, when you get to be in your 70s or 80s, I guess it's something that you think about. And
not all the time.
It seems that people are exhausted.
Only when I have to write a check.
Okay. Well, that's a good reason, at least.
I say, kill me now. You know, kill me now.
Okay. So, well, we'll just have to see how this thing rides out. It does seem as though there's a reluctance by the CDC or other government organizations to contend with it a little bit more. And I don't think we get that much guidance. And I find that that's wanting. I just wish there would be greater guidance. Just like you said, you're not going to die from it. It usually takes 30 days before it recedes. But it's infectious up to that point. And you can get infected just by touch.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see where all that goes. Going to be very fascinating. Well, there are other things that are happening around the world. Reuters ended up writing on Sunday that the Iranian Ayatollah Khamenei, or rather one of his advisors, divulged that Tehran is capable of building a nuclear bomb when they so choose.
Yep.
And so it scares a lot of people as if they thought that they didn't have that capacity, which they did. So, but they're ratcheting up the discourse. They're just saying, hey, you know, we could do whatever we want when we want it. So,
We had a deal. We had a deal. Trump pulled us out of the deal.
Right.
We, you know, the deal didn't stop them from getting a bomb, but it stopped them for 10 years. unless they cheated.
Yes, it did.
And at the time that Trump pulled out, they hadn't cheated. So this, I laid this at the feet of, this is Donald Trump's legacy. Okay? He left the world in chaos. He pulled support from our NATO allies. He made deals. He tried to extort cooperation from President Zelensky because he was afraid Joe Biden would beat him, which he did. He went, and in terms of the Iran deal, he got rid of the 10 years and made it 6 months, what he did.
Yeah. And
that's what
is there
is.
Anything that the president president can do? Because he's getting a lot of pushback. A lot of people are not thinking highly of him, as if all of this stuff, which was laid before his feet before he got elected, he has to contend with, and he's not doing too well in the polling. Is there anything more he could do?
Polling is nonsense, because if for some reason next week gas was back to $3.25, his poll numbers would double. People are voting based on their daily lives and how much more it's costing them to go to the gas station, and food is costing more. Used cars cost more. Everything costs more. You can't blame Joe Biden for that. I mean, I know Republicans would like to, but they can't.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So is this the sort of response that one can expect from any country in every country? They're going to blame whoever the leader is, whether they had something to do with the outcome or not?
Yeah, of course.
So that's the name of the game. So, and why does that travel so easily? Does the Republican response give one the hope that things could be different?
Yeah.
How are they going to change the economy?
Well, that's not necessary for them to give us a plan about how they're going to fix it. What in this case the Republicans are doing, is simply laying it at Joe Biden's feet because he's the president, and as Harry Truman said, the buck stops here.
Okay. So there's really nothing that President Biden can do at the moment.
Well, here's the thing, Hezzy. 37% of Americans have college degrees.
Yeah.
If you don't have a college degree, there's a good bet that your reasoning ability isn't really great.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody tells you that your gas prices are the result of Joe Biden, you believe it. It's a lot easier than understanding supply and demand globally. Why take the time to do that when you can blame Joe Biden?
Okay. So that's the reality. And that's a game that every country in the world plays?
Well, I'm not a politician in every country, but
no, I know that.
If you look at South America, even where they have dictators, if the economy stinks, there's a revolution.
Absolutely.
So
exactly.
Even Putin's worried about that.
Absolutely. And what's going on with Putin with respect to Zelensky and Ukraine? It seems that some of the equipment that was promised by the West from Europe has just started to arrive. So does it look like Ukraine will be able to survive this, or are they exhausted?
I don't know.
Physically as well as mentally.
But I don't know. You have a superpower picking on a child, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised that Ukraine has been able to last this long.
Me too. Totally
think
surprised.
About it. The Soviet Union was a superpower, fought Adolf Hitler in World War II. It held the United States at bay and the Western Europe at bay during the Cold War.
Yeah.
We were scared stiff that we have everybody was climbing under a chair and a table in elementary school because we were duck and covering in case there's a nuclear war. Now all of a sudden they want Ukraine and they can't have it because their military is in tatters, they're not trained properly, and their equipment is 50 years old.
Well, that's the question. Why did we believe for so long that they were on the same level? They had parity and power equal to the United States, even in the 60s.
Because they did. They did in the 1970s.
They did at that time?
They did. They had a nuclear arsenal. They still have more nuclear weapons than we do. But they just haven't had – their economy is useless. They've got the – I think they've got the GDP of Texas or something like that. They don't make anything. They don't make anything. They have oil.
Mm-hmm.
They sell oil. Okay? Yeah. And that keeps them going. If it wasn't for the oil, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. But the fact of the matter is, there is no more Soviet Union. It's Russia. And the Soviet Union is broken up.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh. All right. So Russia is, you know, Russia is not powerful as it was as the Soviet Union.
No, not at all. Wanted to ask you also about President Biden. He went to the Middle East. He saw the Prime Minister from Israel.
Yep.
He went he visited MBS from Saudi Arabia, but it didn't seem to go as well as I had expected. And I don't know why that is.
You don't?
Well, you know
what?
I mean,
why didn't it go as
you? I would have figured it would have worked out.
Let me put it another way, Harry. What did you expect?
I didn't really expect anything, to be honest with you.
Well,
I was that's what I got. Yeah, exactly. Because I didn't expect that there was going to be a camaraderie with MBS and the president.
Well, here's the thing.
They made it
here's
seem that just because you flew into Tel Aviv and then you flew from Tel Aviv to Saudi Arabia, it was going to be the opening up of traffic from Israel to Saudi Arabia.
That was stupid. During the campaign, Joe Biden said he would make Saudi Arabia a pariah nation because MBS ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi.
Right.
Now he's president, and now we have an oil issue, and Saudi Arabia is a major producer of oil, a member of OPEC. In addition, there are issues in the Middle East with Israel and Iran that require us to be friends with Saudi Arabia, much as we might even like it. We are friends with a lot of bad people. We've been friends with bad people. It's called international politics. It's real politics. And in this case,
the fist bump
was Joe Biden's way of telling him.
Oh, for some reason we lost him. So he's going to call us back. And so for some reason, the fist bump is where we left off. So we're going to find out where that is. So bear with me a moment. There he is.
Sorry about that.
So we got lost at the
fist bump thing.
So what happened there?
Joe Biden's way. The fist bump was Joe Biden's way of telling MBS that no matter what he said prior, all bets were off, and that we were willing to work with the Saudis on Middle Eastern issues, as well as oil issues. And so
it seems
logical
to me.
You got to do that. You have to do that.
Right. So why didn't that work for MBS?
It did.
It did work for him?
Sure.
I thought
he got Joe Biden disappointed somehow. He got Joe Biden to eat crow.
Yes, he did. So is that all that's necessary? Is just like one-upmanship? Is that the way it works on such a high level? So the president was slightly embarrassed, whatever. He's a big enough man. He could tolerate that. It's no big deal.
Well, I don't really think it's an embarrassment. I just think that it was a necessary thing for Joe Biden to do.
Uh-huh.
And he did it. In order to have any chance at all of talking the Saudis into increasing their oil production and to have relations with Israel, sometimes the American president has to get his foot out of his mouth.
Okay. All right, so that's where we are now. It was like a new page, a new chapter, and conceivably it could develop into something different.
Do you think the
charm offensive is going to be working for President Biden? Okay.
I think it's not a
guarantee. Okay.
No, but MBS is the titular head of Saudi Arabia. And what he says goes in terms of policy. And we need Saudi Arabia, and they need us. We need Saudi Arabia not to embrace Russia and China.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yeah. And in order to do that, Joe Biden had to show publicly that he was friendly with MBS.
Okay. Okay. And what about the crisis in Europe now because of Russia and Ukraine? Is there anything more that the U.S. can do, or is the U.S. doing everything it can? Because the U.S. is sending equipment to Ukraine to keep them afloat. Germany seems to be on board. A lot of countries in Europe are part of the entourage. So it seems to be working. Does this look like a winning plan? I think it seems like it's working for Biden, too.
I really don't have enough information on the bottom line in terms of who's got more armaments, who's got more munitions, who's got the better army. I think person for person, the Ukrainian army is far better trained because we trained them. Okay?
Yes.
But the problem is that they could be running out of people, whereas Russia is conscripting, 17-year-olds. And so they appear to have an unlimited amount of people, and Putin is the kind of guy that doesn't care how many of those people get killed.
Right. So is there something that we need to create as a nation? Have we lost a little bit of our panache because of the last president? Are we rebuilding our image? Is that working out or not? Do we need to rebuild our image?
Well, we do need to rebuild our interest because the rest of the world looks to America, the rest of the democratic world, looks to America to lead. And Donald Trump's mantra was America first. We're not going to lead. You're not paying enough money. Why should we do this? You're suckers to fight in the army, which, he said at graveside, Kelly, who lost his son, things were off the rails. And that's why it's extremely important that Donald Trump never get to the Oval Office again.
Do you think that there's potential that he might? Or are the investigations, the January 6th findings seem to be undermining him, maybe not as strongly as they should or could, but maybe they need more time?
Well, first of all, there's a hearing on Thursday.
Yes.
At 8 o'clock in the evening, prime time. And you know what that hearing is going to show you? It's going to show you what was observed inside the White House for the 187 minutes between the beginning of the attack and the end of the attack and what Trump was doing. And essentially it will show you that he was cheering it on, that he wanted Mike Pence to do his bidding and Pence wouldn't do it, and that constitutionally Trump should be barred from ever holding office again because he in fact participated in the insurrection. It was his plan.
Right.
He had his enablers carry his plan out. People around him in the White House knew he lost the election, and yet they attempted to do his bidding. 147 members of the United States Congress, all Republicans, voted not to certify the results, and the public needs to know that. And once the public knows that, even if Donald Trump declares his candidacy, he's not going to be the president.
Okay. And will that be, will that turn the page for America? Because we seem to need something to bring us back together as a nation. Because otherwise we seem to be split on many, many different levels.
Well, the only way we can be brought back is if the leader of the nation, whoever it is next time around, compromises on major issues so that he demonstrates that he's willing to give a little and get a little. As Ronald Reagan said, mm-hmm. if I get 80% of what I want, I won.
Okay.
So, you know, the problem we really have now, Hezzy, is that we are looking at people who are Republicans who are not conservative. They're white
mm-hmm.
Christian nationalists.
Yeah.
And they want mm-hmm. white Christian nationalist beliefs to control the government.
Yeah.
And they say so out loud.
Yeah, they do.
You couple that together with the Supreme Court that is also made up of religionists. That's my word. That means people
yeah.
who want to impose their moral beliefs, whatever religion they happen to have, based on that
mm-hmm.
religion, on the rest of us.
Do you think that is America that negative about different sects of our of the nation? Is there so much bigotry and prejudice that it can divide us? I mean, do we just
it's not about bigotry and prejudice.
What is it?
It's about wanting the government to be controlled by religion rather
uh-huh.
than what the Constitution says, which is that there shall be no law made respecting
mm-hmm.
the establishment of religion.
Correct.
So there was a separation of church and state written into the Constitution. These people want their view of Christianity. It's not even all Christians, obviously. Plenty of Christians
mm-hmm.
think they're nuts. But, you know, they want their view of morality, whether
okay.
it's abortion or guns or gay marriage or whatever it is, to be imposed on the rest of us. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like we moved the equation much closer to that reality for a long time. Does it look like it could be expunged? Is there a way to bring the nation together? Because there's also the capacity of earning a living if you believe in certain things or you live in certain communities as opposed to other things. Can we bring the nation to modernity right away? We're not going to be able to change things in 25 years or 50 years, are we?
Well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think that you're going to find that young people reject this view, this worldview, and that the people who believe in the worldview are over 50. And once those people
yes.
start to die, the new folks will come in and they won't be so rabid. This was the
mm-hmm.
result, by the way, of right-wing evangelicals participating in politics in the 1970s and 80s and becoming
yes.
a force majeure in politics by themselves and enforcing pro-life positions on candidates that wanted to run for office.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're faced with a situation, and I think this is going to be telling to the midterms, where they abolished Roe, but the trigger laws in all of these states prevents abortion under any circumstances. Forgetting about life of the mother, rape, and incest, you can't have an abortion,
right.
period, which is why this 10-year-old kid from Ohio
That's
or from Indiana had to go cross state lines
mm-hmm.
to get an abortion when she was raped. And the right-wing
yes.
Republican machine was saying it was all a lie, it was all made up. Guess what? They arrested the rapist.
What are we trying to prove with controlling a woman's right to choose?
I'm not trying to prove anything.
I know you're not.
You'll have to ask the people that are pro-life and that don't want any exceptions and that don't
yeah,
want
I don't,
abortion.
I don't understand it.
I don't understand it. The majority of Americans don't understand it. You're not alone, okay? You're going to have to ask somebody to explain why they feel they have moral authority to force mm-hmm. women to carry pregnancies of their rapist or their incest
yeah.
person who they have incest.
Mm-hmm.
They got
you got to explain it.
I haven't heard an explanation. I just know what the Supreme Court
did. I haven't either.
But I haven't heard an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very frightening. But it seems it became like a switch that caused other things and other issues to come into the forefront. You got gay
uh-huh.
issues, and you got marriage concerns, and mixing of the races, and so on and so forth. What will it take for us to change that demeanor, or is it like you said before, the 50-year-old will have to die, and
yep,
then we can
much.
Have maybe a different attitude because
yep.
The younger people are just thinking differently.
You need a change
and
in
have
the
a different perspective. We did, We never had
you
that
need
before, or does that? Does every society go through that changing of the guard? Maybe every 25 or 50 years? You would think that we would do this, you know, in steps, incrementally, like the Constitution tells us we should.
Right.
But evidently it doesn't work that way.
I would I am not an expert on what other societies do.
Neither
so I don't know. But I'm only concerned with America, and as far as I'm concerned, older, whiter Americans calling the shots, and they did it through a vessel by the name of Donald Trump, who was anything but a good Christian.
Exactly.
Married 3 times, charged with sexual abuse by numerous women.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But he promised he would appoint conservative Supreme Court judges, and he did exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. So he kept his word on one or two things, but that's about it. It ruined everything else. You would think that there would be – he literally was a rabble-rouser, and he got away with it somehow. And there was no mechanism really to stop him, which is really what's fascinating. Because until I got to see more and more of the testimony that came from the January 6th insurrection findings, I was totally unaware of it. It's like as if I was dead to the world while it was all happening. I didn't find it covered as much or as exactly as it's been covered now.
Well,
even
people that are, My view is that slowly but surely there are going to be a chunk of people that supported Trump that are going to sour on him. Not everybody, not his base, not 28-30% of the people or the Republican Party, but there'll be 5 or 6 or 8 or 10% that were Trump supporters last time around that want nothing to do with him because of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And that's enough to keep him out of office.
Well, you know, maybe next week we really need to talk about what Trump did that actually undermined the Republican brand, or if the Republican brand can resurrect itself into the future.
It's going to be a while.
A lot of people think poorly of it, but there are still issues that are very pertinent that a Republican dogma. We're not giving that much credence because of Trump. And
just remember,
8 million
more people voted for Joe Biden than voted for Donald Trump. But because of the Electoral College and because of the way the framers gave various states with little or no population the same representation in the Congress, in the Senate, that other states have, we now have a total imbalance in terms of the majority rule here. So you're getting a situation where presidents are starting to lose. Bush lost the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Donald Trump lost the popular vote, and they're getting elected anyway. Now, it seems to me there might come a point in time where if you lose the popular vote by 20 million votes, something's definitely wrong.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's something to behold into the future. As usual, what a pleasure. You know, thank you so much for your input, because I don't think I'd be lucid without it. Michael Edelman, what a pleasure.
All right.
All the best.
Speak to you after the hearings. Bye-bye.
Give my best at home. Thank you. Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Michael Edelman is the international as well as the national analyst and pundit. And how many people do you know who could do both? I don't know anybody but him who could do both. So, which is really cool. All right, let's see. We've got, let's see, who do we have here? 1 second. Yes, it's got to be Ron Matten. I'm losing my mind. 1 second. Is this Ron Matten?
Yes, it is, Hezzy. How are you?
Hello? Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
God, I got it right. I wasn't sure. I was losing my mind. How are you feeling?
I'm doing well. And you?
Thank God. Thank God. I got no complaints. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't until last night that I heard late in the evening, that we had more shootings and more killings in Yonkers. What's going on? Does anyone know what's happening here? Why do we have all this stuff?
So I believe we had 5 shootings, all, I think, related Saturday into Sunday. And then we had one additional one last night into this morning on Main Street. I'm not sure. I can't tell you about last night's. I don't know enough about it. But the ones from the previous night seem to be gang related, and we've always had somewhat of a gang problem in Yonkers, particularly in some of the housing projects or some of the housing, the public housing that we have here.
The only thing that made it so difficult to comprehend is that, you know, Yonkers always used to bandy about that we're the safest city of like population across the nation, which turned out not to be true. But it was like the dogma that seemed to, you know, cause a dog to wag its tail, and it seemed to keep on going. And even the former police commissioner, you know, he left a legacy, as from my perspective, that was wanting, because he never got the city under control under the police department. And the thing that really I found really pathetic is that we only recently, in the last couple of weeks, we hired, what, another 36 probies for the first time? What the hell was Commissioner Mueller doing for 2 years?
36
other than equivocating BS.
I'm not sure.
Sorry?
Yeah, I don't know if we hired 26 or 36.
Maybe 26 or 36. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. We could probably use 26 and 36.
Probably. I think so.
The type of violence that we're having really is only going to be quelled with a task force. A task force of city, state, and probably federal, considering that this is gang violence. I mean, people like to call it gun violence. Let's call it what it is. It's gang violence. Somebody has to fire that gun. And look, drugs, prostitution, those are all lucrative trades for the gangs. And we do have a gang problem
in Yonkers.
Because the
only thing is, considering that we've been operating for so long, don't we know who the gang members are? Don't we have an internal intelligence force that knows who these people are? They have a record a mile long.
But
what have we been doing with all this information? Not that it's on your back. It's not your responsibility to know. But I have no idea where we're going with all of this.
So Hezzy, when false narratives are put out there, you can't attack the problem. If you turn around and say we're the safest city, and then you turn around and say that, well, these aren't our criminals. Our criminals are coming from New York City. They're coming from Mount Vernon. They're coming from elsewhere. If you're not willing to admit that there's a problem, you're never going to be able to address it.
That's a very good point.
So if you're putting out false statistics, remember, Yonkers gets these statistics from the DOJ. The DOJ gets the statistics from Yonkers. If we don't give the DOJ the correct statistics, they publish whatever we give them. So if we're not reporting all the crimes or we're reclassifying what should be felonies as misdemeanors, it's not going to be reported correctly to the DOJ.
That's a very, very good point. I remember, now it's probably 25 years ago now, or 20 years for sure, that we were supposed to file emails with the state government to advise them of who was arrested and what they were arrested for on a daily basis. And what ended up happening years ago was that the police department did not send the information as was requested and demanded by the state, and they sent them a letter, not an email, but a regular letter. And eventually the state said, you know, we've had enough of your games and it's over. You send us exactly who's arrested today and what the outcome was of that arrest, and we want it emailed to us. And God help you if you delay us by one day. And if you do, you will be fined $1,000 a day for not giving us the information. I think City Hall would like me to get a stroke, so I will forget this story, but I never have. And the point is, that's exactly what happened. So what do we do to make corrections on these sort of things that are still permitted? There is no validation for any of the statistics that are given out by the city. And that's not your responsibility. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to put it on your back. You know, because you're not an elected official, and
you've got no input on it. You know, we trust the police commissioner to ensure that proper information. You know, the police commissioner has one boss. Well, has more than one boss. I mean, I would tend to say that, you know, the taxpayers are also the police commissioner's boss.
Sure.
But the police commissioner works for the executive branch. Reports to the mayor, or the mayor's designee, you know, so it's up to the police commissioner and the people he reports up to make sure that accurate information, regardless of how damaging it is making its way to reports, and if you have that information, then you can act on it.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. I don't know how we're going to change the environment. You know, the code of conduct in the Yonkers Police Department, because like there used to be times. Remember when they installed videos in police cars, and when you
got into the
police car, the camera was supposed to shine on the people in the back seat. Because they were being taken in somewhere. I guess it was to protect them. And interestingly enough, the cops never were videoing who was in the back seat at all. What they did was they took the camera and pointed it up to the roof, so you had no information whatsoever. You didn't even know anything. These were the games that they used to play. There used to be a time when we didn't even have like a lapel sign that had your name on it. And if they had one, they never wore it. And nobody said a thing. I was like in shock. I once asked a couple, well, who are you? None of your business, he told me. None of my business.
Well, you know, I will have to say that, did you see the incident that transpired last week with the DoorDash person?
No, I didn't see that.
So there was a video going around social media and other places where this woman was driving what appeared to be an unregistered scooter on the sidewalk. She was DoorDash. She was either working for Uber Eats or DoorDash or one of those
yeah.
firms. And the police had stopped her, and she was evasive, and she didn't present the license. She was driving a motorized vehicle, a scooter, which should have been registered, and she should have been licensed. and the police were very, this was all captured on their body cam, as well as, I guess, there were some people around videoing this. So the video that was presented by the people was not that great. They, look, the woman ran away. She took her scooter and tried to outrun the police, pushing her scooter on the sidewalk. The police apprehended her. They, in apprehending her because she was resisting arrest, they wrestled her to the ground. This is Yonkers police. The police, I believe, did a phenomenal job. They were respectful up until the point, even with the woman who was evasive. There were other people getting in the police's face who had no business getting involved. They were respectful with them. The woman eventually got arrested. And she could have avoided arrest. She could have just taken a ticket.
Right.
And avoided.
But she didn't want to.
But I'm going to say in that instance, the Yonkers police acted correctly. They had body cam footage, which vindicated them because the footage that was put up on the footage that was put up on the various social media outlets, you know, was not the full footage, was edited. Was not, you know, was not showing the altercation beforehand, you know, where the woman was evasive, couldn't produce a license, didn't have a license plate on her vehicle that she was riding on the sidewalk.
Right.
So I'm going to say taking that incident, the Yonkers police did very well. If it was a result of training, if it was a result of where we used to be to where we are, I will be very complimentary to the officers, and if all the officers are to act like that, they deserve our gratitude. You know,
well,
I would agree with you.
I would agree with you. The only problem is that our police department is not forthright. They pick and choose where they want the information to go out to. They don't care one way or the other if there's a credible source or there is no credible source. And they play this silly little con game. And that's why you only get some people who know what's going on and other people who don't. It's really frightening. I mean, who are these people? And why do they control the news? I thought they were there to serve the information so that the public would be aware of it. And they're being detrimental to their own police force, especially, as you point out, that the police conducted themselves in a very, very forthright manner, and so on. So why don't we all know it? I don't get it.
Well, they,
I guess
they,
I must be the old buzzard in the room, so I guess I don't get it.
Well, I remember there was a time, look, when I was a kid, you know, I remember getting pulled over by a police officer. Again, I was 18 years old, driving an old riding car, but I was treated very poorly, and you know, that was normal.
Was that
so,
in Yonkers?
Actually,
Yonkers,
believe it or not,
Yonkers.
I was pulled,
really.
I was pulled over by a Yonkers police officer in the Bronx.
Okay.
He blew a stop sign just over the line in Riverdale. He blew a stop sign and nearly hit me.
Wow.
And then, you know, he proceeded to search my car without my permission. You know, it was a whole incident. This had to be like 1979. I mean, you know, it's, and Yonkers police.
Those were the days. Those were the days when the Yonkers cops had a reputation. Which was spelled S-H-I-T. That was their
reputation.
Yeah.
You know, a few years later, I was pumping gas in a gas station on Radford and Riverdale Avenue, making some extra money.
Yeah.
You know, I was still in my early 20s at the time, and I had a police officer come over in the middle of the night for a tank of gas. And I said, you know, it's whatever it was, $20 or whatever. And he said, oh, I don't pay. I said, what do you mean you don't pay? He goes, talk to George, the Norman guy who's on. I don't have to pay, and he drove off.
Wow.
This was Yonkers police in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yep, I heard about things like that.
You know, so it's a very, I'll say it's a very different time. Any officer that I've interacted with in the last 15, 20 years has been phenomenal. You know, I'm just giving you my perspective. I can't, but, you know, right. They've been phenomenal. They've been professional. You know, so that's it. And again, police, you know, interactions in the 70s and 80s were very different than now. I think policing and professionalism within policing has changed. But anyway, mm-hmm. That's not going to fix the problems. That's not going to fix our gang violence problems in Yonkers.
No.
You know, look, I installed some.
But
new
we don't. I don't think we have. I don't think we have a gang. A gang unit. That, or maybe we do, but
we
they're
do.
Not
it's,
aware.
The gang wraps. Unit is part of the the gang unit is part of the narcotics unit in the Yonkers Police mm-hmm. Department. So
I
they,
see.
You know, maybe they need to establish their own unit outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think it's larger because. Yes, while we have gangs and we have gang violence in Yonkers, you know, these gangs operate across city lines and across county lines. So I think this
Absolutely.
Really needs to be. And I don't know. It's quite possible. Look, they had a big task force that downed some folks. If you remember the cop that got shot in the Lodine Hill section of Yonkers,
yes.
I think on Elm Street a few months ago. That was all part of an interagency task force. So they are out there. I just think we probably need a little more help. Remember, some of these things that Albany has done, our Yonkers delegation has made us less safe. The bail reform law and has been an utter failure. You know, this is a little outside of Yonkers, but we had a bodega owner in New York City who was attacked behind it. Well, he wasn't the owner. I'm sorry. He was a worker. He was attacked behind the counter, and in self-defense, he stabbed his assailant. And you remember, he wound up in Rikers Island, and there was a woman there also who took a knife out and stabbed the bodega worker. And she wasn't charged. The bodega worker was charged. The guy, the perpetrator, the original perpetrator who was murdered, was killed, not murdered, because murder is different. He was killed. There was self-defense involved. And this guy is still being prosecuted who defended himself. You can't defend yourself these days. But the criminals go away scot-free. You know, that Albany has put the criminals over the constituents.
Well, that's the thing that I find, and that's something that I don't hear so much from the Democratic side of the aisle, but I hear more that's from the Republican side. And I think that the Republicans are correct in pointing out that the law is not balanced and there's something wrong with it.
It's not. You know, the pendulum has swung too far. In an effort to try and, I guess, make the law fair, because there's been some calls that the law or the administration of the law has not been fair. They've really tipped the scales away from law-abiding citizens right now. You know, look at people are angry. You know, We're talking about the gang violence right now that involves shootings. We're not talking, you know, what about all the property crimes that are going on? There was two doors down from me. I live in a fairly nice neighborhood. Two doors down from me, a house was broken into about a month ago while the people were home. So they went in through the ground floor window. People were, family was upstairs getting ready for bed. It was like 9 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And that was in the Colonial Heights section of Yonkers, you know, fairly nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a problem with crime, and I know it's not just Yonkers, it's across New York State, but we have a crime problem.
Yes.
And I live in Yonkers, and so we need to put more resources into it, get us where we need to be.
I don't hear that, though, from our elected officials. You know, their language that they use is so poor that one doesn't even know where they stand. They seem to have a way of saying nothing but expressing something that doesn't have any credibility. Have we become the ultimate, politicians? We talk a good game and deliver on nothing? Maybe that's too wide a berth. I don't know.
I think elected officials like to paint a pretty picture because it's on their watch. Look, I'm you can't hold the council and the mayor and everybody accountable for a shooting in Yonkers, but you can hold people accountable for doing nothing. And I'm not saying people are doing nothing now, but I haven't seen it addressed. I haven't seen it addressed in a hearing, and maybe we're not at that place yet.
Okay.
But I think we're getting there.
So that's good if you think we're getting there somehow. I didn't even realize we were moving forward.
I mean to say we're getting to a point where we probably should have a hearing on how to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
I think it would be advantageous for the council to take some time and explore where we are and what can be done, and just the same way you do with the budget hearings.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll do a better job, exploring what can be done with gang violence than we did on the budget, because we didn't do such a good job on the budget. But, a lot of people believe we did a good job on the budget. Well, so it's a question of opinion, which shouldn't be, because the budget is just numbers, and the numbers should fit. They don't. Anyway, so very interesting. So what do we have to look forward to as we explore our pattern? Is there like Republican dogma or Democratic dogma that's going to be a bit more conducive to the lay of the land as we find it here in Yonkers? Or are we looking for something else?
I think we need to look towards a little bit of common sense. I don't think you're going to find common sense wrapped up in a political bow. I think you need to look at the laws and how they've contributed to some of this. Look, some of the things we've done to police officers over the last 2 to 3 years have worked to make them less effective. If you're taking if you're taking the indemnification of police officers away in the administration of their duties, of course, they're going to be more careful and probably less productive because they don't want to get sued. They don't want to put their house at risk because they're no longer indemnified. Mm-hmm. If you're taking the protections of 50A away, 50A is allowed police officers' records to be concealed.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember that if I'm accusing police officers get accused all the time, unfounded of violating people's rights, because that's a tactic in having your case thrown out.
Right.
So if your name shows up on a report that you've had a civilian complaint filed against you, or you've filed a complaint against, or a police officer's had a complaint filed against them, that doesn't mean that there's been any wrongdoing. That's usually a tactic for a perpetrator to get out of being charged.
Mm-hmm.
So what Albany's done over the last 2 years is made those 50A records all available to the public. And in fact, Lohud has been publishing them when available. I don't think Yonkers has released theirs yet, but Mount Vernon, White Plains, they've released all the records, and the Journal News has chosen to publish them. Again, because a police officer's name shows up doesn't mean that they've actually had an infraction, but somebody's accused them. I think we've just made it more difficult for the police to do their job over the last couple of years. And yeah, people should think criminals are these days, because criminals get the upper hand.
Well, is there a way to balance out this bias, either for or against the police? Or does that have to be designated by law?
I think
because someone accused somebody doesn't mean they should have a record on it, does it?
Well, that's what's listed. That's what's in these listings. You can go on now to some of the websites, and you'll find listings of police officers who have had complaints against them. And again, it's just a complaint. You'll see the proceeding. Mm-hmm. The complaint could be unfounded, but take that in combination with removing the indemnification that police officers have when administering their duties. Somebody's really got to think about whether they're going to put their house or their family at risk trying to protect the public.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, that's a good question.
Is that only an issue that comes
up in Yonkers, or what about all the other communities in Westchester County?
How do they resolve it, or don't they? It comes up across the state, and I think our elected officials really have to revise the law to make it easier for police officers to do their job.
So that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, but I don't hear that. Why is there a reluctance to hear that? Is there an imbalance between people who would rather undermine the police than there would be people that want to embellish their capacity to do their job?
People like Carl Hastie, Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, and Assemblyman Petro, Gary Petlow, who have taken an immovable position that they were not wrong, and they're not willing to revisit their mistakes and fix them.
Mm-hmm.
I've been at a number of meetings where Gary Petlow keeps talking about this unfortunate young man who spent time in Rikers and committed suicide over a backpack. That's one incident.
Mm-hmm.
That's one incident could be dealt with differently than changing the bail laws and everything else and making us all less safe. So to keep bringing that issue up is a false flag.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And where do they have these discussions?
I go to many of the communities, like the Hyatt, Colonial Heights. They have, the elected officials come by to talk, and bail reform has been on a lot of people's minds. And I've never seen Andrews show up at these events, but I have seen some of the other elected officials show up and support their position, or try to kind of score them out of their position slightly.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I should let you go because I know you got an appointment.
Yeah, I appreciate our time, and thank you for giving me
this
out.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye. Well, there we have it, folks, none other than a politician from Yonkers who isn't always heard, but I find it very, very encouraging to hear him, because he presents issues of concern that concern the community, and he seems more balanced than the other people that are in elected office. because you don't hear a very lucid conversation from others. So Ron Matten's very, very compelling as far as I'm concerned. He seemed to have credibility in my mind. And so it's always very encouraging to listen to him. Okay, well, let's look at some other things that we have the opportunity to look into at the moment as we come up to the last half hour of our broadcast. Bear with me a moment here. So, one second. Okay. Well, this is very interesting. Russia's Gazprom says that there's no sign of the Nord Stream 1 turbine. Wow. Well, it seems that Russian energy giant Gazprom says it has asked German engineering firm Siemens for the return of a turbine that was being fixed in Canada, and there are fears that state-owned Gazprom could use the opportunity to cut off gas, which is what we were thinking about only yesterday. So the Russian gas supplier Gazprom said on Saturday it had asked German engineering company Siemens for details about the return of a turbine under maintenance in Canada to ensure the delivery of gas from the Nord Stream pipeline to Europe. Gazprom is conducting maintenance on the pipeline over a 10-day period and has stopped delivering gas through the conduit, which runs beneath the Baltic Sea. So the question is, what's the problem? Well, European countries, particularly Germany, to which the pipeline runs from Russia, are anxious to see if gas supplies are resumed. There are fears that Moscow could use the annual work on the pipeline, which was scheduled well in advance, to shut down gas deliveries in response to Western sanctions over Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Well, gas supplies via the pipeline had already dwindled by about 60% before the switch-off, with officials blaming problems with the gas pumping turbine. Well, Moscow has already said the restart of supplies depends upon actions taken by the West, and that it depends on preventing negative effects of unlawful restrictive measures. Canada has issued a, quote, time-limited and revocable permit last week that would exempt the turbine from sanctions imposed on Russia by Western nations, but Gazprom says it has seen no evidence that the turbine will be sent. Well, despite the waiver, Gazprom has said it does not know if the turbine, which is used at a compressor station for Nord Stream 1, will be returned. On July 15, Gazprom submitted an official request to Siemens to obtain the documents to allow the export of the gas turbine engine of the Poltovaya station, a critical facility for the Nord Stream gas pipeline, the firm said in a statement. The Gazprom is counting on the Siemens group to unconditionally fulfill its obligation with regard to servicing gas turbine engines on which depend the reliable operation of the Nord Stream pipeline and natural gas supply to European consumers, the company said on Saturday. So what happened with the turbine? Well, the turbine is believed to still be in Canada, with a spokesman for Siemens saying that company experts were, quote, working intensively on all other formal approvals and logistics, end quote. Ukraine summoned Canada's ambassador on Monday and described the situation in return to return the repaired turbine as unacceptable. And the World Ukrainian Congress filed a lawsuit asking the Canadian federal court to review the decision in the hope of having it overturned. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau responded to the criticism, saying that the sanctions, quote, are aimed at Putin and his enablers and aren't designed to harm our allies and their populations, end quote. Trudeau said, quote, the difficult decision, end quote, to allow these parts to be shipped to Germany was taken to avoid a possible major energy crisis in Europe and to prevent popular support for the West's backing of Ukraine from ebbing away. So those are the issues. Frightening sort of stuff, to say the least, but definitely a problem. Now, this is very, very interesting. The issues that the United States Supreme Court is going to rule on next and how they could change the country. So with landmark decisions about abortion and climate protection, the Supreme Court's past term has been one of the most momentous in the history of the United States. And here's what's next for the country's highest court. The U.S. Supreme Court is on break right now. Chief Justice John Roberts formally announced the start of the judicial body's summer recess on June 30th. Its next term will start on October 3rd. The break comes after a tumultuous past few weeks. The nine justices have made a number of decisions that have caused an uproar in the United States and beyond, including cutting the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, ruling that states couldn't impose strict laws on carrying handguns in public, and overturning the constitutional right to abortion, rolling back the decision made in the historic 1973 Roe v. Wade case. And since the federal right to terminating a pregnancy fell, several states have already instituted abortion bans. The repeal of Roe v. Wade marks the end of an era in the United States. Reaction to the ruling, celebrations on the conservative right, horror and anger on the liberal left show once more how deeply divided the U.S. is now. After making several rulings that will change U.S. society for decades to come, the nine justices, six of them conservative, three liberals, have 3 months to relax now. And here are some of the cases that the court has already agreed to hear when its new term starts in October. The first one, election law. The Supreme Court will hear two cases on states' authority over election proceedings. In Merrill versus Milligan, it will have to decide whether Alabama's restructuring of its seven electoral districts violates the Voting Rights Act. If the justices decide in favor of the Republican legislature's plan, it will put most of the state's black voters in a single district. And despite black citizens making up more than a quarter of the population in Alabama, their vote would effectively only matter for one of the state's seven House of Representative seats. Traditionally, black Americans tend to vote Democratic. There is no date yet for when the Supreme Court will hear the case, so it's likely that the district map redrawn by Alabama's Republican leadership will stay in place for the November 2022 midterm election. In Moore versus Harper, the court will also have to decide the legality of a redrawn electoral district map, this time in North Carolina. The state court has said that the new map is unconstitutional. The Republican legislature has said that the state court has no power to decide that, and if the Supreme Court supports this view, it will mean state courts cannot review how the legislature handles election issues. And this could become important if, like after the 2020 presidential elections in some states, there are disagreements over perceived irregularity. Leaders could then decide to side with their party's candidate and rule in their favor without the court being able to weigh in. Well, because of decades of racism pervading all levels of society, many universities in the United States today make a point of admitting a certain number of non-white students. And this admission process, which takes race into account, is called affirmative action. And it is based on the idea that many non-white children don't have the same access to educational opportunities growing up as their white counterparts. The Supreme Court will hear two cases brought by the conservative non-governmental organization or NGO Students for Fair Admissions, SFFA, against Harvard, a private university, and the University of North Carolina, which is public. SFSA wants race to play no role in college admissions. Supreme Court Justice John Roberts seems open to that idea. Quote, the way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race, Roberts wrote in a 2007 opinion. So if the Supreme Court abolishes affirmative action, the number of black students at selective universities is likely to shrink significantly, says New York Times journalist David Leonhardt, who has reported on affirmative action for two decades. Well, then there's free speech and anti-discrimination laws. In 303 Creative LLC versus Elanis, the Supreme Court will have to decide whether a business owner can reject certain customers on the basis of his or her personal beliefs. Rory Smith, a website designer who offers services through her company 303 Creative LLC, does not want to create wedding websites for customers from the LGBTQ community. Lower courts have previously ruled that her refusal of clients in same-sex couples violates anti-discrimination laws in her state of Colorado. Smith's lawyers argue that by insisting Smith cannot discriminate against same-sex couples, the state of Colorado forces her, quote, to convey messages that violate her religious beliefs. If the Supreme Court goes along with this reasoning and rules in Smith's favor, it will be sending out the message that religion is an acceptable reason to refuse someone service. That, in turn, could make it more difficult for same-sex couples to access certain services in conservative parts of the country where many business owners might not be accepting the LGBTQ people. So what about contraception and same-sex marriage? Well, aside from cases that are already in the docket, there has also been some speculation as to what else the Supreme Court could have its eye on. Justice Samuel Alito made it clear in the majority opinion on the ruling that led to the end of Roe v. Wade that the Supreme Court's decision should not be viewed as a threat to other landmark cases. But another of the court's conservative justices, Clarence Thomas, found other words in his concurring opinion. Quote, in future cases, we should reconsider all of this court's substantive due process procedures, or precedents rather, including Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell, Thomas had written. Griswold refers to a 1965 Supreme Court justice that established a married couple's right to use contraception without government interferences. Lawrence is from the 2003 case of Lawrence versus Texas, in which the court ruled that states could not cannot criminalize sodomy or same-sex sexual intercourse. Obergefell refers to the 2015 decision that legalized same-sex marriage across the U.S. So whether any of these landmark precedent rulings face as Roe v. Wade will only become clear since the Supreme Court returns to work after summer recess. So we'll have to see where that goes and when. So very, very interesting to say the least. Then we've got wildfires, which is unbelievable. Wildfires continue to rage in France and Spain. Thousands have been evacuated from their homes by authorities in Spain and France. More than 1,200 firefighters are deployed in Giron, a prefecture in Bordeaux, France. Thousands of hectares have burned in Portugal. Firefighters struggled on Sunday to contain wildfires raging out of control in France and Spain as Europe wilts under an unusually extreme heat wave that authorities link to a rise in excess of mortality. Two huge blazes have burned their way through pine forests for 6 days just south of the city of Bordeaux in southwestern France. The fires have forced the evacuation of some 14,000 people, including many who were on vacation in the area. Firefighters in Spain were supported by the Armed Forces Emergency Brigades in trying to extinguish more than 30 fires consuming forests across the country. The devastating forest fires are triggered by a summer heat wave in Europe. Parts of the continent are bracing for new temperature records early next week. Mateo, France, is expecting new heat records on Monday. The fire season has hit after an unusually dry, hot spring that left the soil parched and which authorities attribute to climate change. So what is happening in France? In France, situation deteriorated in the southwestern Gironde region where firefighters were fighting to control forest blazes that had destroyed nearly 11,000 hectares. That's 27,000 acres. The wildfires in France forced more than 16,000 people to flee. 7 emergency shelters had been set up for evacuees. The Interior Ministry announced it would send an extra 3 firefighting planes, 200 firefighters, and so on. So that's the end of our day with you today. I got to get going to pick that up. So bear with me a moment.
Okay. All right, let's see what we have here. Okay.